Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, May 20th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our Rumble, YouTube, or another network and would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you could send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find them on our banners on the right-hand side of our website, which proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. We're picking up on the Gospel of John, chapter 17, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 17. These words spake Jesus, and lifted up his eyes to heaven, and said, Father, the hour is come. Glorify thy Son, that thy Son also may glorify thee. As thou hast given him power over all flesh, that he should give eternal life. And this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. I have glorified thee on the earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. And now, O Father, glorify thou me with thine own self, with the glory which I had with thee before the world was. I have manifested thy name unto the men which thou gavest me out of the world. Thine they were, and thou gavest them me, and they have kept thy word. Now they have known that all things whatsoever thou hast given me are of thee. For I have given unto them the words which thou gavest me, and they have received them, and have known surely that I came out from thee, and they have believed that thou didst send me. I pray for them. I pray not for the world, but for them which thou hast given me, for they are thine. And all mine are thine, and thine are mine, and I am glorified in them. And now I am no more in the world, but these are in the world, and I come to thee. Holy Father, keep through thine own name those whom thou hast given me, that they may be one, as we are. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in thy name. Those that thou gavest me I have kept, and none of them is lost, but the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. And now come I to thee, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one. As thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. And the glory which thou gavest me I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that thou hast sent me, and hast loved them as thou hast loved me. Father, I will that they also, whom thou hast given me, be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory which thou hast given me. For thou lovedst me before the foundation of the world. O righteous Father, the world hath not known thee, but I have known thee, and these have known that thou hast sent me. And I have declared unto them thy name, and will declare it, that the love wherewith thou hast loved me may be in them, and I in them.
Okay, let me do another mic test. Test one, two.
That's good.
Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome.
Okay, and screen sharing. I don't know if it was sharing from the very beginning. They got a new system here, and it didn't look like it was, but anyway.
Yeah, could see the lyrics and then could see the scripture and now can see the home screen.
Okay, great. Okay, you know, I want to cover something I've covered a couple of times in the past month, but I think it's a real serious situation, serious problem that we need to give some attention to. And that is what's going on with the sun. And it's going to get worse, I hear. We really almost was hit with a really, really major sun flare. And, I mean, it has hit the world. And the interesting thing, the important thing to note, is in this case, we had 3 days, or up almost 3 days, for when it was known that we were going to be hit with sun flare. And I'm not sure exactly how much. I mean, it was only a partial hit. But the sun flare in itself that headed out towards Earth was extremely strong, even stronger, it looks like, than the Carrington event. But again, most of it missed us. So we really dodged the bullet here. And people need to take this serious and really make sure they protect themselves. So we're going to share a couple of things. There's been a couple of reports from a few individuals. So I'm going to play that, and then we'll move on with our program. But again, let's watch the videos and we'll talk a little bit about it. Okay, this is on Glenn Beck that he did. It was a 7-minute clip, so we'll listen to that.
Well, I know this is probably not on anybody's charts, but the seeing the aurora borealis is a very big story that nobody has been talking about. Yep. Everybody's like, oh, look at the sky, it's so pretty. Sure, but why is it pretty? Why is that happening? This is the first time in 20 years that we have seen the aurora borealis as low and as south as possible, or as it was. But we had an event, and I talked about it in our meetings, Stu, last, I think, Monday, a week ago Monday, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy, and I said, there's a huge CME that just happened. There's a huge solar flare that just happened. And luckily, it was on the side of the sun, but it was coming our direction, but not directly. It was the biggest solar flare since the Carrington event in, what, 1860 or whatever?
Yeah, 1860, I'm sure.
The Carrington event you're talking about? That's 1860.
Mm-hmm. How many times have we talked
you guys
about the Carrington event?
The Carrington event
We're all over the Carrington event.
Well, Pat just started a new podcast called Pat and the Carrington Event.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wait a minute. I'm trying to look. I can barely see through my eyes, but are you wearing... I'm a fan of the Carrington event T-shirt.
I am. Yes.
So the Carrington event.
I usually do.
Yeah.
I do have it in different colors.
Right.
But yeah.
Available at patsajerk.com. So the Carrington event happened in the 1860s, and we were hit by a massive solar flare. And at the time, the only, you know, we didn't really have electricity or anything, but we had telegraphs. And the telegraph wire all over the country burned up. I mean, literally started on fire. From the telegraph all the way through all of the poles, it just burned out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, a significant problem with today's electricity and all of our wires. That could have been a blackout situation, an EMP. We dodged the bullet. It could have shut down power companies and power lines all over the country, all over Europe as well, for at least a year. The problem we have is all of our power transformers, it takes them, I think it's a year to build and to replace giant transformers, and we don't have extras. Nobody's thinking about this stuff.
And we haven't protected our infrastructure.
No. And it would be very inexpensive.
Yes.
Brett Weinstein wrote a great article on this last week about, you know, he was kind of making fun of, you know, how everybody was saying, oh, look at the beautiful sky that's going to happen next week.
Yeah.
And he's like, it would take so little to protect our infrastructure, and nothing is protected. We really dodged the bullet.
Well, this is a few years ago, but they were talking about not just a solar EMP, but an EMP from, you know, a foreign adversary, and how we could protect our infrastructure from it for, it seems like it was only $1 billion.
Yeah, I think it's under $5 billion.
Yeah, it's dirt cheap in comparison to what we would lose if it actually happened.
You know, that
and
is
they won't do
of,
it.
It's one of those low probability, high, what do they call those things?
The impact.
Yeah, high impact.
Mm-hmm.
This impact, if we were hit by an EMP and it takes 3 nuclear weapons launched into space, Iran could probably do it, you know, when they get their missiles.
North Korea. Yep.
North Korea. All you have to do is put 2 barges, one on the east coast and west coast. You fire 2 on one. One goes over the middle of America. One goes over the west coast. Then you have a boat on the east coast. It takes 3 missiles detonated at the right altitude above America. You'd shut us down, and in the first year, 95% of our population would die.
Yeah, because we're back to the cave time.
Stone Age.
Yeah, it's you don't have refrigeration. You don't have transportation.
And you cannot repair it fast enough because we didn't protect anything. This mm-hmm. is one of the craziest things. Congress, you're spending money on so much. A turtle tunnel. Spend $5 billion to protect the infrastructure.
Doesn't make sense not to.
No, it doesn't.
Seems like one of the basic things that government is designed to do, right? Like,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Yeah. They're not. There's a lot of things they're doing that they're not supposed to do. Wouldn't this be something that falls in the category of
yes.
must do?
Yes.
And how often do they talk about infrastructure?
I know.
We've got crumbling roads and bridges.
Right.
And we've got electronics that could be protected, and they're not being protected.
Do you know that this solar event could have knocked out all of Elon Musk's satellites? They were afraid of those, and all of our GPS.
Gee.
Do you know what would happen if we lost all of our GPS?
Be a mess.
So the GPS, our magnetic field is so far awry right now that it's at about a 30 degree switch. And so it's drifted about 30 degrees. Okay, so it's not up at the pole and at the top and the bottom. It's 30 degrees off. And because of that, it's causing all kinds of holes and thinning of our ionosphere. So, you know, all of this stuff can come through. We have such a problem with it. It's moving so rapidly. We used to have to adjust our GPS, I think it was every 5 years, then it was every 2 years, and because our poles are shifting, it was then a year. It's now every 6 months we have to reset our GPS satellites. The poles are moving that rapidly.
Okay, I have one other video, probably about 5 or 6 minutes. I'm going to play on this one here, and then I want to talk a few minutes about it, and then we'll move on with our program.
Here's an actual image of this sunspot taken by one of the satellites by NOAA, with NOAA recently observing one of the most powerful solar flares seen in the last few decades, all coming from this sunspot, and all within just a few days after these super powerful emissions headed to planet Earth. And what's even more surprising is that NOAA also made an extremely rare announcement about the sunspot, and of course about the emissions that happened around May 10th. The announcement being that this was going to result in an extremely powerful geomagnetic storm, powerful enough to potentially damage a lot of technology on the planet, and essentially that type of a geomagnetic storm that we always kind of dreaded, the, I guess, so-called Carrington-like event. And so yeah, back to that picture I was going to show you. Turns out the sunspot was actually not that different from the one that caused the Carrington event. Very similar both in strength and in size, and basically releasing a huge amount of stuff when it was facing planet Earth. Here, as you can see from this simulation, this was actually a series of 5 coronal mass ejections, and also multiple solar flares, all of which hit planet Earth. And so, yeah, technically this was our Carrington event to some extent. Here this was classified as G5 storm, the highest possible geomagnetic storm we can experience. And here it actually happened twice during that weekend. Here's a slightly different view showing us these coronal mass ejections happening one after another. And by the way, Carrington event was also a G5 event. But comparing this to a Carrington event might not be as accurate because we don't have enough data about that event, but interestingly we actually experienced something somewhat similar in 2003 as well. This is often referred to as the 2003 Halloween solar storms that also resulted in huge aurora, but also major damage and power outages in countries like Sweden and South Africa. Actually, South Africa experienced a tremendous damage to its power infrastructure because a lot of power transformers basically exploded. And so here, something similar was feared as well. But luckily for us, nothing seems to have happened. For example, during such storms, we sometimes expect major problems with satellites or even satellites falling out of the sky, because during this time the atmosphere of the planet expands just a little bit, enough to dramatically influence orbits of certain satellites. For example, the ones SpaceX is launching, and they've already lost a few satellites to previous solar storms, but this time nothing happened. No damage to satellites, no major damage to any power grids, although some unusual irregularities have been observed in the US, and only temporary disruptions to systems like GPS. But everything else seemed to be fine. And it's unclear if this was just because we got super lucky, or maybe we just became a little bit more prepared after initial disruptions in 2003 and before that. Nevertheless, just the fact that this was an extremely similar sunspot to the Carrington sunspot, with the overall emission of coronal mass ejections being somewhat similar as well, is of course kind of surprising. And in case it's not clear how big this thing is, this is actually approximately 15 times bigger than planet Earth. So yeah, this is not a small sunspot. And it was really surprising that NOAA decided to call this a historic event, because despite not actually observing any damage on the planet, the damage could have been done and it could have been catastrophic. So at the moment I'm kind of curious to read some studies or papers about why nothing seems to have been damaged. I mean, did we actually get super lucky, or are we kind of prepared for more such events in the future? But the reason I wanted to start with this and why this is so powerful and so important is technically because it was predicted by a study a lot of scientists kind of ignored early on. And it has something to do with trying to explain solar cycles. Now you might know that solar cycles are technically 11 years long. So basically every 11 years our sun goes through the peak and then comes down, reverses its polarity and starts again. You can check out some of the previous videos that talk about each of these individual stages in a little bit more detail. And we basically are now in our cycle 25, and a lot of previous studies, actually even based on this graph, assume that this cycle is going to be one of the weakest, but not the study from 2019. And that video from 2019 with the much younger and I guess less jaded and slightly happier Anton talks about this in more detail, because here the prediction was that this is going to be a huge cycle and we're going to have some major emissions and very likely a Carrington-like event that could happen anytime. And they even predicted this to happen maybe around 2024-2025. So yeah, a prophecy. Well, not really. They did some really good science there, and the calculations were pretty accurate. And so it turns out that they might have been correct, with the explanation here being that the solar cycle is not 11 years long, but is technically 22 years long. And because we observed a major emission in 2003, we should also maybe expect one around this time as well. And, well, it happened, and this is definitely one of the strongest cycles we've had for a very long time. But here's the thing, it's not technically over yet. Technically, the peak is going to be next year in 2025, and so this might happen again in the next year. although when it comes to this particular sunspot, it has now turned away from us and is unlikely to bother us anytime again. But yeah, in some sense, we basically just lived through a kind of a Carrington-like event that resulted in some of the most impressive light shows on the entire planet. And though they actually resemble most aurora, what's surprising here is of course the location. A lot of these were in places that have not seen aurora for nearly 100 years, which basically highlights how ridiculously powerful these events were. But before I finish this video, I also wanted to briefly explain what exactly we're looking at when...
Alright, if anybody wants to listen to the rest of these videos, you can go look them up yourself. They're both up on YouTube. Anyway, I had brought this up, a couple of times, maybe a year or so ago, but we did have some sun flares that took place, I think it was just a couple of months ago. And I've been hearing about this for at least a year or two, that they're expecting some huge, huge problems in 2025. And recently, maybe 4 or 5 months ago or so, I heard that 2024 might be pretty bad also. And here we are, we're in 2024, and we've had two major solar flares just this year alone, and we're probably going to have some other problems. And again, you know, the sun puts off these solar flares, the Earth is moving, and the question is, you know, the timing of the solar flare eventually hitting us. Now, I've been told, and we're going to take just a quick look at a few other things here, but I've been told that usually we have about 24 hours of warning that a solar flare had occurred, and that the flare is on its way, and that it would arrive at a certain time, and whether it would hit the Earth or not. Of course, we haven't heard anything about it. There was no warning. I am extremely surprised. And I also heard recently that it could take up to 2 or 3 days for some of these flares to hit us. And I'm not sure how that works, 24 hours or, you know, 3 days. Maybe it's just where the sun is, the Earth is at the time of its movement around the sun and so on. However that works out, I'm not sure. But on our website, we do have some information on this. And when I started to try to prepare for this, I was looking for, let me tell you where we're going to be looking. It's under solar flare on the right-hand side of our website and EMP protection. Okay. Now, I have heard, some news that it would happen quickly. But, you know, they're trying to reduce the population on the planet. Things are really hot, and who knows what could happen. And people need to protect themselves. But anyway, I was looking to try to protect myself, and I was looking at I was going to build a Faraday cage and put my one for my generator, so I would have power should the electric go down. And also, they sell these bags that you can buy on Amazon, and I'm sure many, many other places. They're very cheap, and they have pretty big bags, and they have small bags. And I have my backup, for my computer. I have my backup that I put onto a drive, and both on my computer, and I got two that are in bags. I got four copies, actually, of all the things that I do here on my computer, because I'm really concerned that I would lose everything. And I know for me, I've done a lot of work and a lot of writing, and it's all on my computer, so I don't want to lose that. So anyway, in my search for building a Faraday cage and will potentially figure out how to protect myself from this this event, I fell upon this website, and I'm not sure exactly how I got to it, but in any event, there's a place that they sell EMP shields. Now, these videos here, I'm not going to play these videos, but you do want to, when you get a chance, come here to this page and take a look and listen to these videos and find out what is really going on. So with this, you don't need a Faraday cage. What it is, it's an EMP protector. Now, this research started in 2017, and that's when Trump came into office, and he ordered the protection of our grid. The strange thing is that nobody seems to know about it. The news media has not reported. All the electric companies were informed about this and were told to notify all of the customers to let it be known that you know, even though that the grid is protected now, and that took place, the process of doing this started in 2017, and by 2019, our entire grid has been protected. And again, nobody knows about it. Nobody talks about it. And so the question is why isn't the news reporting it? Why isn't the electric companies telling the people about this in their homes? Because your home is not protected. Your vehicles are not protected. You know, you could have, for instance, the old vehicles, which were before computer time, and those, you might, the points may burn out or something of that nature, but generally speaking, you know, the whole system wouldn't be destroyed. But in the vehicles that are out there today, everything has all of this electronics in it, so we would lose everything in your car. Your vehicle is just totally worthless. I haven't even thought about planes, so I don't know how that all works. Now, we do know that, I think it was, I'm trying to think, maybe about a year ago, Musk lost 20 satellites, and all our satellites are now protected, but he had launched 20 satellites, and in the process, I guess, of those satellites being launched, a solar flare came by, and it was a minor one. It did hit us, but it would have affected our satellites if they were not protected. But because the 20 that he had set up were not in place yet, nor were able to, you know, be brought down and go to sleep, I guess they would say, they were not protected, and 20 of them fell, burnt up in our atmosphere. But if we were to be hit with a Carrington type event, or Carrington, however you pronounce that, you know, it would take your home out, it would take your vehicle out. It would take, you wouldn't be mobile at all. Your generators would go, they'd all fry. But again, these solar flares, there is an EMP protection for that. It's reasonably inexpensive. I put one on my house, so my house is protected. And guaranteed, even against lightning strikes, it protects your home for that too. But in any event, if we were hit, anything plugged into your house, I think it's within 200 feet. I don't remember, but it was quite a bit. So if you have a large house, it would really cover quite a bit of it. But anything plugged into your home during an event like this, it would be protected. And I put one on my vehicle. They do make them for vehicles, and they make them for generators too. So I put one on my vehicle. My vehicle is protected. If we got hit, you know, mine would be totally unaffected by it. And I put one on the generator. The problem with the generator, though, if you just have a regular generator that doesn't have an electric start, you know, I'm not sure how that would work. I would imagine, I guess you could be creative maybe and put a battery on it if you have one that doesn't start with a battery and somehow run this protector that it would protect your generator. So I don't know that it would protect the generator. That doesn't have that electric start. You know, I have a push-button electric start with a battery on it, and I've got a trickle of feeding it, so it's always making sure that I have enough electricity and that it's always powered up, whether it's on its own or being trickled in to build up the battery, and, of course, my EMP is connected to that. So it's all protected. So I'm just making the point here that people need to be thinking about this. And you got to ask yourself the question, and I think we already know the answer to this, but why aren't they warning us when these things are happening? Even the one that happened last time, you know, I didn't know about it until it was already in effect. It wasn't on the news, nothing. I mean, this is a serious problem. We know that the powers that be are not informing us about anything. And it's their hope that something like this would happen, that 95% of the people would be dead within a year from a situation like this. But again, Trump did something, and our major grid is protected. But again, the electric companies have not notified the people. Let them be known that your home is not protected by this system, and that you have to do something about it. So this protects everything. No need for a Faraday cage. It protects your home, your vehicle, your generator, solar protection, generator protection, radio protection, RV protection, motorcycle protection, watercraft protection, and so on and so forth. This is military grade. Our military is totally protected by this as of 2017. The question becomes is, how come we were not protected of this before 2017? You know, I mean, we could have been, we could have gone to war, and all they have to do is put a couple of nukes above the United States at a certain, positioning and elevation, and America would be crippled. The military would be crippled. Everything is down. But again, Trump took care of that part, and we are protected, so we don't have to worry about that. But again, our homes are not. So you want to watch these videos. It's a very simple connection, putting it in. I'm not an electrician, but being a general contractor, I've done some electrical work, and usually I'll contract electrical contractors for major work. But generally speaking, we did a lot of, simple stuff. We do a renovation on a bathroom or something, or building a bathroom or something where we run all electric for that room and so on and so forth, the simple stuff. This is a simple install for someone who has basic understanding. The instructions are pretty simple, but if you don't know what you're doing, it could be dangerous. So if someone would do this, you probably would want to hire an electrician. It takes only about 15 minutes to install. Very, very simple installation. So you'd only have to pay maybe an hour's rate to an electrician, $120, $150 to have it installed for you. So people need to be thinking about this. Take a look at this page. Go through everything. Click on all these. We have lots of material on it, written material. We have videos on it and information. Let me find it. There's a video here down at the bottom. And this is where they talk about when this thing took effect, how the military has been affected, how our grid is protected here in the United States, but, how the electric companies were supposed to report to the people and offer them an EMP protector for their home, and none of that was done. And we know why. We know why. So people need to be thinking about this and taking care of this. This is one of our partners. On the right-hand side of the website, you find, just click on the link here on the right side, Solar Flare EMP Protection. And if you go through us, you get $50 off, and NLA gets a few dollars for making the sale. And, of course, that goes into supporting National Liberty Alliance's work. This is so important. It's not over yet. There could be lots of them, and they can all be missing the Earth, but all it takes is one to hit the Earth, and the interesting thing is we've been hit by two of them just this year alone. So, all right, with that, we're going to get on with our program. We do have a queue opened. Let me see if there's anybody in the queue at the moment. Okay, we have two people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're coming in on a phone, it's a *6 and 1 to enter the queue. If you're using an app or a browser, there should be a link where you can click on to enter or join the queue, and you'll be put in here, and any questions, comments, or corrections that could be offered, we're open for that. Okay, with that, we'll take our first person. I was going to talk a little bit about traffic tonight. There's a lot of things been going on with my case that I got a lot to share about, and different strategies, things they're doing, which I never expected to happen, but we did create a strategy to deal with the things that they're doing. And so there's been a couple of things that I do want to share, but maybe next Monday I'll get to it. But I thought this was much more important to cover at this point than to deal with going into the town courts and dealing with that problem. So next week we'll probably update on where we're at with this problem with the traffic courts and how we might be able to deal with the problem. Okay, so let's take our first caller here. Margie, how are you doing? Hey, Margie, what state are you from? I don't remember. Let me click the button, open your mic. I'm sorry. The world. 701 opened up first. looks like Richard. What state are you from? We'll get you next.
North Dakota.
Okay, what's up, Richard? Richard's your name?
Well, I'm sorry?
Yeah, it looks like your name is Richard.
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead. You got the mic.
North Dakota. Well, we talked a little bit last week towards the end of the program about a judgment that I had found out by surprise. We were looking to purchase a home, and the title company came out with the report, and they said they found a judgment in there, and it was from back in September of 2016. Now, can a judgment, they're saying that I have to pay that off. It's called a judgment cannot attach to the property as it is a desert homestead. And since the debtor has less than $150,000 in equity. But keeping in mind that North Dakota Housing doesn't accept this, and then the judgment will have to be paid and released. Well, I didn't know about the judgment for one thing. So my question is, is there a procedure that has to go in order to get a judgment on somebody?
Well, look, in order for there to be some kind of a lien, who's got the lien on you? Is the lien by a mortgage company or something?
It's the bank.
Okay.
I quit banking with them about 14 years ago.
Yeah, they do what's called non-judicial. They do what's called non-judicial foreclosures. Okay, I never heard of a lien being able to be put on that way. Although, you know, if you buy a new vehicle, for instance, and you're paying payments on it, it comes with the lien already attached to it. And until that vehicle is paid off, whoever sold that vehicle to you has a lien on it. As far as a home, I know with the Homestead Act, they cannot really take your home. As long as that's been filed when you purchase a home under a Homestead Act. You can only file one home, the home you're living in. So if you had three or four homes, I don't believe you can file for the Homestead Act in all of them. And that's normally...
Well, what bothers me is that they're saying the North Dakota Housing doesn't accept this.
Well, that could be just a strategy to put you under pressure, you know.
Right.
No, it doesn't.
So what would I do to challenge that? What do you recommend I could do to challenge that part of it? First of all,
I don't like lawyers, but there are times when you can call a lawyer, have a conversation with them, give them his hour, 15 minutes, or whatever he charges, and ask about it. You can do research on it. I've done some research, but not a lot. It's been a while. And as far as I understand, you're protected. The only thing you can't do, if there, you know, liens can be applied, or the mortgage company or someone might try to apply a lien. And if they were successful with that, I suppose, I'm not too sure exactly how this works, I suppose the lien goes and sits there, but they can't execute it. But if you tried to sell the home, you're not going to be able to do it. Okay? So I think that's the most that they could do to you, is try to hit you up if you're trying to sell the home. But as far as they can't seize your home and sell it. Now, the mortgage companies do, and why do they get away with it? You know, the banks, whoever's holding the mortgage, they get away with it. And that's kind of strange, too, because number one, the Homestead Act is there to protect you, number one. I'm not sure exactly how that works. You might want to talk to a lawyer. You know, spend a few dollars and talk to the lawyer about the Homestead Act and your situation, and see once what they say. I don't think that they can do anything with it.
How can North Dakota Housing deny it, not accept it?
I don't understand that they can. Again, it may be just a strategy to put pressure on you to force you to pay something, and that could be it. But again, you know, to put a lien on your property, there's only one way you can put a lien without going to court, and that's what's called a mechanics lien. Now, a mechanics lien has a drop-dead date. Maybe it's different from state to state. I'm not too sure. I think it's probably the same. But I believe it's 8 or 9 months. If you put a lien, I was a general contractor. I knew about being able to file a mechanics lien without having to go to court. a mechanic's lien, if, as a contractor, if I were to lien someone's home for lack of payment, what would happen is once that lien goes on, and again, I could do that without going to court, once that lien is off, if that person is receiving money for, let's say, constructing a new home, okay, the funding would stop until that lien is taken care of. But that's a mechanic's lien. Mechanic's lien, like I said, has a drop-dead date. I think it's 8 or 9 months. It can be renewed. I don't know how many times it can be renewed, but every 8 or 9 months you can renew those liens. So as far as being a contractor, in my case, a mechanic. So it's called a mechanic lien. Now, the other thing is these non-judicial foreclosures, okay? That's all done in secret. Usually, they'll at least notify you. They go through the process of making it look like they're going through the courts. The court plays along with it because, they're part of the whole problem in the system. Our courts are 100%, 99%, 99.9% probably corrupt, okay? If you go up against the status quo, major corporations or the government itself, you're going to be thrown out of court under Rule 12, particularly on the federal level. But every state rules, they also have the same thing. So how do they get away with it? They can't. But, again, they got the guns. People don't know the law. People are kept ignorant of the law. Our liberty is in the law. Our heritage is in the law. We should know the law. And I'm talking about common law particularly, which would override all of that. But they do whatever they want. So you got to be real careful with that. If I were you, I would definitely spend a couple of dollars to talk to a lawyer concerning that. They are pretty good with that and understanding how that process works. I wouldn't trust
them. Can this go on? No, we're purchasing. We're not the seller. We're the person. I understand that if I own some property, real estate, and I tried to sell it and had a judgment on it, they could attach it, and I'd have to pay it off. But in this case, I'm buying the house.
Well, if you're buying the house, when that house...
that judgment follow me? Being a, it's a non-real estate, it's non-mechanics lien, it was a revolving line of credit that I had at the bank.
Well, again, if they, the thing is they really can't sell the house without paying it off. So if they tried to sell it, there would be they would come in and collect the money owed to them before they would get it. So let's just say you bought a home for $100,000, and let's say there was $20,000 lien on there, and let's say the house was free other than that lien. So when you would pay for the closing, and you would give those people, the lawyers would work this out. The lawyer would receive the money. On the other side, in order to work that process to pay the individual, what would happen is because of the lawyer is responsible for making notification to whoever the lien holder is, and they would come in. They'd have representative there, and they'd take their $20,000, and then $80,000. The 80% would go to the individual who's selling, and it would go through if that's what's going to happen. But again, I'm not expert in that area. I have general information. You need to talk to someone who has real information on that. And even
so
though a lawyer is a liar...
What kind of a lawyer would I ask for?
A real estate lawyer would be the real focus. I wouldn't go to any lawyer, but I'd go to a lawyer that deals with real estate, particularly does a lot of closings and things. They have the knowledge. And
title company lawyer be one to do talk to?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That would do it.
Because that's who sent us this letter. The company that is going to be insuring it, Westcore Land Title Insurance Company, whatever. And they had some comments in there about, it said commitment conditions, it said public records. The recording or filing system established under state statutes in effect at the commitment date under which a document must be recorded or filed to impart constructive notice of matters relating to the title to a purchaser of value without knowledge. The term public records does not include any other recording or filing system, including any pertaining to environmental remediation, protection, planning, permitting, zoning, licensing, building, health, public safety, or national security matters. That's a confusing statement to me. But as it would apply to this public record thing that I have, and I'll read to you what it says, the requirements. Provide a written payoff statement, pay and release of record, the following judgment of X number of dollars from XYZ Bank. I used to work for that bank, by the way. And it had been many years since this thing came in. And it filed September 1st, 2016. And then it gives a file number. That file number, would that be at a county court or a state court?
That would have to be with the state court. It wouldn't be with the county court. They're the ones that will be dealing with that. But again, you know, there are so many problems here. For instance, let's take the loan itself. When you do a loan, the bank, usually you go to a bank, but there's other places you can go, but particularly a bank, and they write the loan and they control the loan, they set the loan up, and they're the in-between person. The money really comes from the Fed window, and that's what you have to understand.
Is that all loans that way or just mortgage loans?
Well, any mortgage that goes through Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, or all those other things, comes from the Fed window. But there could be private money, and that I've never looked in to understand that. But I've always heard mostly about, again, going through the Fed window for the money. So what happens is the bank sets up the whole process through the Fed window, makes the transfer work, okay, and they come in and get maybe half a point or a point, whatever it is, that's 0.5% or 1% or whatever the case may be of the value of the sale. So they get their money. They're really out of the picture. It's done. You don't owe any money. They have no skin in the game. They're not part of any kind of a contract. No contract exists. So if anybody was to come out after you to try to get the money, it would be the Fed through the Fed window. But that's all been covered up, and ultimately the banks, they'll send you a bill saying, hey, you got monthly payments, you got to pay us. And when you pay the bank, of course, it goes to the Fed window. They get a piece of the action for making the payment. And what happens is lawyers will bring a lot of different mortgages together and package them and sell them. And all of that is unlawful. It's all unlawful. It's all illegal. And so they can't do that, but they do. Okay? And even the foreclosure is a facade. It's a make-believe. You know, if you go to court, let's say for the IRS, it's a federal issue, and you go to the court within your federal district, okay? And when you go into that court, they have a special courtroom in there. It looks like any other courtroom, and it's for the purpose of and particular judges who will, you know, sit on that. They get a stipend for sitting on that and hearing the case for the IRS, and then they get a bonus if they get if it's guilty, and they file and they, you know, decide for the other side for the IRS, which they always do. So they'll push, even though there's a jury that'll come in, that's all stacked, and the whole thing is set up. So they stack the jury. I guess occasionally, you know, you get someone in there that has a little knowledge that's sitting on the jury and convinces the rest of the jury, hey, this is all against the law, you know, this, that, or the other thing. So from time to time, it's extremely rare that does happen. But they're very careful on who they put on the jury. So they have these questionnaires, and we got a copy of that on our website somewhere, probably under law. Go under Education Starts Here, I think, and you probably find something under law. So we have some information on that. You could see how they stack the jury. For instance, the questionnaire will ask them questions. You know, do you have a weapon? Do you own a weapon? Does someone in your household own a weapon? Where do you get your news from? Do you watch CNN? Do you watch Fox? You know, all these questions that has nothing to do with the case. Again, this is all to understand the psyche of the individual they're putting onto the jury. So it's real problematic. The point I'm trying to make, though, really, is this, is that courtroom is an administrative court. They make it look like it's a federal court, that is a court of law, but it's under USC 26, which in itself says it is no law at all, okay? There is no jurisdiction, no such thing as, 26, Code 26 jurisdiction. Doesn't exist. If you go look it up, you find out we have all that under law. You can find information on that, and you can look at USC 26. I've written a memorandum on that, which lays out, you know, the whole thing on that. Also did one on the foreclosure, on non-judicial foreclosures. And again, so like what they do in the IRS courts and the federal buildings, again, there's a judge that sits, a couple of judges. They sit on other cases, of course. They're in the federal system, but there are one or two judges that specifically will deal with the USC 26 court. And again, it's an administrative court. It's not a court of record, and it's a stacked jury. You lose. It's like going to traffic court. You lose. Occasionally, someone wins. Very well. Now, same thing now with the state courts. When they come up and they do a non-judicial foreclosure on you, it's a make-believe court. At the end of the day, there's no sign-off. There's no certification of a court case because it's unlawful. But it's all a cover-up. It's a game. And I don't know if these lawyers are just that dumb that they go along with it. They don't investigate or read the law deeper enough. They definitely don't look at the common law. And so whether they're just taught that and they believe it, which I think a lot of lawyers are probably the case, But some may really understand it, but they still go along with it. The whole thing's a fraud. So
if I get copies of the court records, can I ask for everything that would pertain to that? Would there be an
Well, you can ask for everything. Yeah, you can get everything. There shouldn't be no problem with that. But nevertheless, you know, they tighten up.
What should I look for? To make sure, you know, to find out any loopholes or...
Well, again, you're not going to find anything that's beneficial because the whole thing is a fraud. The whole thing is a setup. The court really doesn't exist in any official way. They're just using the building, they're using the process. And, you know, again, the whole thing is set up. It's like the banks, you know, the banks work, and they'll do whatever the IRS wants, they're going to do. You know, I know I've sued the IRS before. They came to banks. I had three banks at the time. I was doing business with three banks at the time. One of them was a... goodness, what do they call it? A union. What do they call it? A union. I'm trying to think of the name they call it. A credit union. Okay. So one of them being a credit union, when I served notice on them, they didn't do anything. Okay. The other banks, okay, they ignored my and the law. Their law that they wrote says that the banks that you have 7 days to respond to the banks to deny and prevent them from giving your money over to the IRS. But again, the IRS does anything they want, and they just take it. So I had problems with two banks, and one bank I didn't, because they honored my paper that I wrote to them, telling them they can't do it. I'm not agreeing to this. I did take the IRS to court. And this was kind of early on, I guess, before it really got as bad as it is today. I'm trying to think what year it was in. I don't know, 2014, maybe somewhere around there, 2015 or 16. I think it was more like 2016. So I sued the IRS. I was still learning, and I did win the case. Not in the court. If you go look my case up, it looks like I lost, but they sent me a letter of apology, they sent me a release of lien, and they said I wasn't liable for tax for those years. And that's because I figured out how things were working, and I put it on the paper, and they didn't want that in the court system as part of the record, okay? That's my presumption, and I'm sure my presumption is correct. So if...
As a purchaser of new real estate, can this judgment has nothing to do with real estate to begin with. It was a credit card thing, you know, like a revolving line of credit.
Well, it has nothing to do with it.
Is there anything that I can bring against the bank?
I cannot see any way that a lien could be placed on that house. Well again, that's not true in the sense that they may have taken him to court and liened the house, knowing that the lien can't be really executed until it's being sold. So that is probably the case. Did you talk?
Well, that's what I understand it to be, too. My question is, because when I read, okay, now here's one other part that in North Dakota, Century Court has a statute of limitations on actions. And in this case, the following actions, I'll just read it to you. It's right out. It's 2801-16. And the following actions must be commenced within 6 years after the claim for relief has accrued. So I looked up, what does that mean after the claim for relief has accrued? Well, what Cornell Law Institute, whatever it said, it had to do when the offense or when the act, when the event occurred that, for example, like an injury, you know, I ran over somebody with my car. At that point, there's 6 years from which they can take an action. Okay? And then it said an action upon a contract. Which is what I had with the bank was a contract, an obligation, which is what I had, or a liability, which is what I had, expressed or implied, subject to the provisions of sections 2801-15. And an action, and then number two is an action upon a liability created by statute other than a penalty for forfeiture when not otherwise expressly valid, an action for trespass upon real property. And in your book, Consent by the Governed, that has something that defined that trespassing thing that, what trespassing? But in your book, it did say that. So I was kind of glad I just opened up.
Well, remember, if you use the house for collateral, there's going to be a lien on it. So that's another way that lien can be put. There's agreement, okay? When you want some money, and they're going to give you some money, you put your house up as collateral.
I'm aware of that. When I was in banking, I could put a lien on somebody's house, but it takes a backseat to every first or second or third mortgage ahead of it. All right, so now.
Right, right.
And then an action for criminal compensation. All right, we're just going to stick with the one here that.
Well, this is credit
an action
card
for relief on the ground of fraud. I'm not. This is not fraud. I'm disputing.
Hold on.
I am disputing that balance.
Hold on a second. This is a credit card lien, right? Is that what you're saying?
It was a revolving line of credit. Yes, attached to my checking.
But it was on a credit card. You know, look, I wish Gerard was here. I don't see him in the room right now because he went through this. We did a case. We put together, and. Where they came and they put a lien on the house, but it was an agreeable lien, okay? And this was a business thing, though. He didn't own that home. It was something he bought for business and was as a rental, I believe. And so he took a loan up against the home, and I understand the home was already paid off or close to being paid off or something of that nature, but he took a loan against it, and it wasn't a lot of money. It was like $20,000. The house was worth well over $20,000. They did go through the process of seizing the property. Back then, he didn't have any knowledge of it, and
so,
I didn't know him back then. But hold on, let me finish the story. So anyway, they put the lien on it, okay, and they executed the lien and they sold the house. They did a non-judicial foreclosure. He didn't know at the time they couldn't do that, so he didn't battle it. He couldn't have a way to battle it. So they did a non-judicial foreclosure. They did seize the home. They auctioned it off. And then the credit, the people that put the money on it, they continued to chase him. There was plenty of money in the sale to pay off that home. But again, that's another con job that I've seen where they'll seize the home and then they'll sell it for just enough to cover whatever it is that they want to get out of it. But then, you know, from what I've seen, there's a game going on that the buyer is part of the game. Okay, and so they're making they sell a house for what it's really worth. Okay, so there's a lot of criminality going on here. So you got to be careful. But anyway, they did lean up against his home, or they put a lien on him, and then they put something on his home, so he couldn't sell his home. But he wasn't looking to sell his home. But meanwhile, as time went on, they renewed the lien. And then I think there are two renewals on that, maybe just one, but I think it's two. And they've already done the three renewals and pushing for a fourth. And he went into court to battle that out. He still hasn't got it. If I recall, I don't think he still has a decision on that. You know, if Gerard's in, comes in a little later, well, maybe I'll let you know and you can talk to him a little bit about it.
Okay, here's my other question. There's two parts to this thing here too. So we're talking about this contract obligation. Can that judgment, now North Dakota statute says whoever is going for that judgment, they have 6 years from the date of the offense. For in the case of a credit card or revolving line of credit, the last time I made any payments or agreed that I owed it or did not owe anything or that I disputed it.
So let me ask you what you're saying here, I think, is if there was a problem, that they could take up to 6 years before they do anything as long as it doesn't pass that statute of limitation.
Right, right. And it said this was filed September 1, 2016. Now, I've been cleaning up my credit after my divorce for many years, and I thought everything was clean. I did a public record search, and when I brought my wife over here from the Philippines, I had to get a background check, and I ordered one on myself just to see if there's anything out there that I didn't know about. So I went to the North Dakota records, and I paid the money, whatever, and got the background check, and this did not show up. It's never showed up in any credit report that I've had. And that's the part that's kind of got me going here. Is it never showed up anywhere. Now I find out about when I go to buy a house. Oh, you got a judgment against you, and they want to be able to attach a lien. But the thing I'm reading in the statute, this is the other part to this. What I read to you was 28-01-16, but it says reference subject to the provisions of 28-01-15. So I'll read you that one. And it's 28-015. It has a 10-year limitation. The following actions must be commenced. This is taken right off the century code. I didn't alter anything. The following action must be commenced within 10 years after the claim for relief has accrued. Now, after claim for relief has accrued, does that mean the judgment? Or does that mean when we, like the other one said, at the time of the case?
I'm not too sure. I think it does mean that. But the key thing here is this. It doesn't
We're
matter.
We're down to 6 years on the first part of it.
They don't
There's no real estate involved at that time.
Right, but you got to understand this. All this is, you know, all of the real estate, the Fed window, the loans, the mortgages,
yeah,
the credit cards, the lawyers, the banks, and of course the court system. They're all working together. Okay, all of it. They create
yes.
all this law to protect.
Got you on that one.
Not
what
us.
What I'm looking for is a way that I can protect myself. Now I've been reading some of the things, and that's that book I got off of National Liberty Alliance. It was called Dealing with Tyranny, UCC. That was, at least on the book, that's where I got it from, was off of National Liberty Alliance, and he references National Liberty Alliance in his book about anything
well,
you have
that,
a contract,
that,
especially
that
the
book,
government.
Hold on. That book, okay, is a book that I had. There's things that's been added to that, but it's not my book. They stole.
No, it doesn't say it is. It doesn't reference. It just says it's.
Yeah, a guy named Robbins. Trying to find him,
yeah.
and he stole my book, okay, and he started selling it. I tried to deal with that problem, and Amazon doesn't want to deal with me. And I just wanted to find out, where is this guy? Who is he? So I was going to sue him, but I found out it looks like the guy went to jail for fraud for other things, and he's in jail right now.
I found this in other places too that. UCC 1-308, preservation of rights. I found that in Cornell Law Library, that anytime you sign a contract, especially with the government or real estate, always sign, and especially, and they also said with the tax forms, always sign it, UCC 1-308, or under protest, or without reservation, preservation of rights, that's what he said. He's always sign that on, and now you're protecting yourself. You're not going to be subject to some secret contract that, of course, the government has all these banks and everything, this making a U.S. person when you're really not a U.S. person, all that kind of stuff that's going on.
Well, but that's not true either. What do you think?
Here's my question. Could I file some kind of a grievance or a dispute and have that put on record at the courthouse?
Well, you've got a good case, but not in these courts. You've got to understand something. The people are playing with that game, and they're using they're in their sandbox, okay? You know, they say, there's people out there that says that we're dealing with the courts and we're in their sandbox and blah, 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 blah. But we're coming in with the common law. Those are our courts. They're defrauding us. And those are our courts. We're using the common law to build cases. We have hundreds of cases being built and over the past, we started doing cases, I think, in 2015. So we got 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years of cases We haven't been doing much in the way of filing cases in the last couple of years, but I have been involved with a few cases personally with some friends and certain individuals and even myself. But we have all these cases. We're going to get much more involved. We're going to be working with another group soon who's going to assist us in really collecting information throughout the United States. We're also going to work through our membership here to pull in affidavits and different court cases that people have been defrauded on. And we will file that case once devolution plays out, or as devolution is in its prime movement, then we're going to go out after the judges. We're starting in the federal courts, we're going out after the bar and numerous other things.
The statute of limitation, what I want to focus on.
Yeah, I'll get to that. Hold on.
Oh, okay. Keep going. I'm sorry.
There's a lot here, and other people are listening, and they want this information too.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, these people that say, well, oh, you're playing in this sandbox, you got to come in this way, you got to use this, and you got to do that, and they have all these different codes they use. We don't use code. We'll use codes against them, but we don't play the game with the sovereign citizen game. There's no need for it. We know that we're sovereign. We're one of the people. We don't have to make too big a deal about that. A statement here or there, just by saying you're one of the people, you said it all. And opening a court of record, you just sealed a court of record, which opens up a jury trial. Okay, so we come in and we deal with all the problem as a fraud, and we build our case as a fraud. And as we started doing that in the beginning, we started to learn that even though we're doing that, we're still not winning. Okay, why? We're not winning because they'll apply their law when it's good for them to apply their law, and then they'll ignore the law when it's up against them. They protect the status quo. So they protect the mortgage companies, the banks, because they're getting payola from them. Remember, they're doing the collection service for the mortgages that's going to the Fed windows. And then you go back to 1871, particularly with the Organic Act of 1871, when the incorporation of the United States took place and that whole process was set up and with chattel, and we had the CESQ accounts, and that's where the Fed window comes in, and there was an agreement with that you worth so much money and you can come get that money and you can buy a home or you can pay bills and you go through all that stuff. Go do that and you're going to go to jail. We had a person we were helping, and they had done some things, and not under what we taught, but they were talking to us, and he got a check, a pretty large check. I think it was $100,000, $150,000, something looked like that, a big check. And 30 days after the check that he had gotten the check and cashed it, feds came in, broke down his door to arrest him. He was not home at the time. They terrorized his family, his children, his wife, broke down the door, so on. But he was on the road at the time, and he called me a couple of times on the road. He was on the run, and that's the danger of what you do, and you don't want to play in that. When you do it that way, you are playing in their sandbox. You're trying to execute things that they promised the people in order to get all of this fraud set up in the system and to convince Congress that this is the way it's going to go and it's as beneficial for the people. You know, it's all history of fraud. Okay, so we don't play in that sandbox. We just go into the natural law. We use whatever codes we can against them, but we build our case in law. There is no statute of limitation in common law because there are no statutes that don't apply to us. Statutes of limitations can apply when they set it up within commercial activities, or if they're doing some activity, they work for a government agency or something like that, and something takes place, and the statute of limitation would save them. But in common law, because there are no statutes, there is no statute of limitation.
One of the things I'm trying to find out is that I want to go back to that North Dakota housing and let them know they've got nothing. Why are you making me pay out something I'm disputing to begin with? And then they have not done anything. I've never had any contact. I have some credit card companies.
Have you done a notice and demand? Are you familiar with a notice and demand?
I have not gotten a notice of demand, but I need to do one. Okay. No, I haven't.
No, you need to do one. You know,
that's
first
what I was asking.
Yeah, look, and we teach the notice and demand in our law course. which anybody that's interested, they can find that under Education Starts Here. You highlight that, you come down to Court Access in the Common Law, and you can come into our law course here. So it's very, very it's affordable. It's a real law course, and it's 90 hours, and you're going to learn more than a lawyer would learn in his school. We do teach the process, which is the important part, the judicial process, how, you know, the right of due process and how it works, how the court system works, how to file papers, to get all the forms, so on and so forth. And also I wrote a book, Court Access and the Common Law. You can buy that. We do deal with some of this in Government by Consent book, too, but not too much, but we do deal a little bit with it.
I was looking for it in your big book.
You can find it. You can also come under Education Starts Here, come to Law, and then under Law you go down to Court Forms and Process, and we give some information here on how you can file certain papers. Okay, here's a demand for oath and bonds. You can follow that process, how to make a common law trust, instructions and forms for traffic court, which we recently updated, and I'll be updating. I'll be adding more stuff to this soon. Instruction for and forms to challenge jurisdiction, we have moving your case for cause to the federal courts, how to file a habeas corpus, move court for enforcement, and then the notice and demand. So you can run a notice and demand. I think there are 8 points in the notice and demand that you must follow. Okay, so you can follow the process, serve it on the individuals, and demand the information and details that you're looking for, and you give them a certain amount of days, and if they don't respond, you tell them what you're going to do, that you're going to take and take control of this whole thing, bring it into court, and make the decision for them. Okay, and then at that point, after you file your notice and demand, you can then file a court case and move it right into a default. And they have the option or the app to respond to that default. It's very difficult to beat a default. But again, if you're going up against the status quo, which would be large corporations or the government itself, they ignore all that. If it works for them for a statute of limitation, they'll execute it. If it doesn't work for them, they'll ignore it. They'll deny it. They'll put the fixer in. I've got a couple.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is going to happen with this one, because actions having a 10-year limitation. Number three, any action or proceeding for the foreclosure of a mortgage upon real estate. That's 10 years. But all this other stuff is 6 years. We're way beyond the 6 years. I have to figure out what the
notice and demand. A notice and demand to get the information from the appropriate individuals that are involved in this. You have to do some research, make sure you find everything, if there is something that went through the courts.
Help just to start with the clerk of court? Would they know what forms need to be?
Well,
file a relief?
We've got it up on the National Liberty Alliance here. And again, we have it on this page under Law, which I said told you, Law, then Court Forms, so you can go there. We have it in the books, particularly Court Access in the Common Law. We have it in our course, Court Access in the Common Law. We're more in-depth in the book, of course, and we're much more in-depth in the course. So you have all that information there on the process, what you have to do. But they have to respond. You have to look for the specific information that you want and to demand that they give it to you within a certain period of time. 30 days is the usual. So they have to respond, and if they don't, then you default them. You bring it into the court, and you start right off with a default and filing the notice and demand that you're coming in there, to really execute the default, and you're asking, that they show cause on why they think that the notice and demand is not correct, that they're going to deny it and argue it. But again, it's very hard. You have to first prove, number one. I'll tell you, I had a situation in the court, and yet I lost it still, okay? I had a situation in the court. The confession was made right in the court by the lawyer. Okay, it was up against a federal, federal lawyer, a U.S. attorney, and they didn't respond in time. So I filed a default, and they came back. They didn't have reason. There are two things that they have to prove. Okay, they have to give a real good reason. Number one, why they didn't respond. Okay. A death in the family might be acceptable, okay? So they have to have a good reason, number one. Two, they have to have two things. The second thing is they have to have be able to lay out a paper showing that there's a strong likelihood that they can succeed in this case. So those two things must take place in order to override a default. Okay, and in the case that I did, I actually, you know, got the lawyer to say it in the court. You know, he said, "Well, I was on vacation and so on and so forth," and even the judge stepped up and said, "Wait a second, you got a whole office full of. Why didn't you pass your case on to someone else if you're on vacation? You got all these other attorneys." He had no answer at all. Okay, and the judge said, "Well, I'm going to make a decision on this," and we know how that decision went. He let the person come in, they went through that process, and then they threw me out claiming that I didn't have a cause of action under Rule 12, which is all a lie, and, you know, there's no, and also I have affidavits in the court. The other side has no affidavits at all, zero, and we all know in law affidavit rules the court, an affidavit unrebutted is the solution. So it was an unrebutted affidavit, everything, time period, defaults, all kinds of stuff, and the court still ruled the other way.
That's something I didn't get from this judgment thing. I never got any affidavit stating what was going
well,
on.
Well, they don't look
at
it.
I never got a summons.
You go, look at any time they come out after you, any case, there is no affidavit. Take family court particularly, okay? They'll have one party write all this stuff up and swear to it, but it's not certified, so it's not an affidavit. But they act as if it is an affidavit. When you go to traffic court or any other administrative court and they put a process up against you, a ticket, a code violation, whatever it is, and they swear to it at the bottom, it's meaningless in a court. It's not certified. Certification is I swear that the information is true. You have to go to a notary or a judge or and there's numerous other people that you can get it, but particularly you go to notaries. But a magistrate can do it. A judge can do it. So it has to be sworn under, you know, some authority and sealed and then recorded. So if that's done, well, that's one thing. It's never done. Never, ever, ever done. So all these children that lose, you know, all these people that lose their children and different things when people come in and maybe the spouse writes something and makes all these accusations, but there's no sworn thing, especially they lean towards the women mostly because they don't want the children to be grown up by men to begin with. They want to break the family. They want to cause more problems within the family. They want dysfunctional families. I mean, because we're slaves, you know. They got to keep the slaves under control. They got to keep us ignorant. They got to keep us fleeced all the time. But in any event, they do whatever they want. They ignore the law, yeah. And then they execute the law when it's beneficial to them. They're evil.
Am I able to? Do you think I'd be able to file a dispute? Because that's what I did with the credit card company. That I filed a dispute.
Yes.
They were reporting all this stuff, and then I find out afterwards that they have a statute of limitations on that, and I had some creditors that were trying to come after me, and they even said, oh, the law limits how long you can be sued on debt. Now, this is a national thing, too. The national one is 7 years. And then because of the age of your debt, our client cannot sue you for it. In many circumstances, you can renew that. Okay, if you renew the debt, then the six-year thing starts all over. And I've not said anything. I was always told I have no records for that alleged debt. And I do not owe anything, and I just declare preservation of rights, UCC-1, and that's always been the end of it. And they keep sending me letters, but they keep saying on there, we can't do anything unless you renew it again. If I renew it, well, then the clock starts ticking again. And I said, no, I'm not going to renew it. I was told to keep my mouth shut, and it's so far it's worked. But this one with the bank is
well,
one
look,
that's just gotten
baffled. You can go into court, and if you get a timid judge, and a judge in a state court, I don't know if you'll find one in a federal court, but you get a judge and maybe he doesn't want to do the wrong thing even though he's pressed to do so, he may rule on your side. And again, I'm going into the state court from the town court, moving the case into the state court. They're giving me a lot of push against this, the court itself. They tried to defraud me right off the bat. But I'm going through that process now. We'll see what the judge does, what kind of judge. But here's the key. If you have a case and it's a really rock solid case. You file your case. They go through the appeal process, and you know, you'll ask for a jury. They're just going to ignore that. In my case, we did a jury trial in the state court. The feds came in, moved it to the federal court, and when they moved it to the federal court, they changed our jurisdiction. We were in jurisdictions unknown. They brought us under USC 28, USC 26, and USC 18, and then they ended up focusing mostly in on USC 26. But in that whole process, I challenged it. I said, look, we opened the court of record. And jury trial right on the top. You can't deny a Seventh Amendment. You cannot deny us. That's an unalienable right and secured by the Bill of Rights. But it went on deaf ears. They didn't care, and they ruled against anyway, and just kept moving on. So again,
well, this whole thing is beyond the statute of limitations. Can I just declare it null and void?
Yeah, hold on. The interesting thing is they play jurisdictional games. Okay, and so when they moved us in, here's what this U.S. attorney did. He moved us into federal court, and at the end of the day, he had us thrown out because the federal court didn't have jurisdiction. And so you go figure that one out. All right. Now, I did notice we have about five cases that I've done with IRS, and Bob Schultz got numerous cases with IRS, and we're finding the same judge on the paper on the court cases, the same judge. And every, you know, they're supposed to have this wheel that however it works, the spin falls onto a certain judge. I guess it's in order, however they work that. So they're not supposed to choose a judge for this case or choose a judge for that case. Who's ever next on the block or whatever you want to call it, where the wheel falls on you, that's the judge that takes your case. And in every single one of these cases, within 48 hours, of them giving us a judge, the judge is changed, and they send notice that another judge has the case, and it's the same guy in a whole bunch of cases, and he's the fixer. And this guy, I've been before him on a couple occasions, and Bob Schultz is on from We the People on a case, another guy I'm working with on a case with this, all the same. And when they respond back, they're such morons. They confuse all these cases. Okay, they say things in one case that doesn't apply to this case. It applies to the other case as far as the facts are concerned or what is being argued. I mean, that's how bad it is. And I wrote what I thought was an extremely powerful case. I mean, point after point after point after point after point, all ignored and did what they want. But you see, the key thing is this, okay? We got hundreds of cases. There's lots of people out there with cases. We're going to be doing a joint thing here, which we've already kind of started with our own membership. So we got hundreds of cases that are going to go back into the federal courts because we're going to go and pursue an indictment, which probably has never been done before, on the entire federal judiciary, because we can prove conspiracy and fraud with all these cases combined. And we'll get lots of other people coming in with affidavits and coming in with other court cases. We'll pile them all in because we're looking for more and more evidence, okay? The point is when we get to the other side of devolution, we're going to get our courts of justice back, and we can resurrect all these cases, and then people can be compensated. And that's the National Liberty Alliance's plan when we started moving into the court system going back in 2015 and 2016 is when we started this. But we always knew that we're probably going to lose most cases. We did win a couple, though, in the process. We won a couple of habeas corpuses where the judges did do the right thing to set the people free. But we've done over 100 habeas corpuses, and we've had maybe 3 successes. Okay, we've done the mortgages and a lot of other things. They pretty much go all. They ignore because that's too powerful. You can't win against these. They're not going to let you win. Because then that becomes something that case could be used against them because they work through what's called, you know, with comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, which they'll use, you know, when you have a court going on and a decision is made in a trial court. This is a trial court. The decision that's made in the trial court, okay, is used as precedence. And it's called comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. Where they rely on the decision. So they make all these bad decisions and then use that as precedence And it just totally destroys the entire judicial system. Okay? All of that is unlawful, you know, because the trial court isn't the final say. It's the appeals court, which takes you up to the Supreme Court eventually, and that's the final say. And that's what really becomes what can be used in another case, depending on not necessarily the facts, but on the law that's being applied. You know, I use a lot of the Supreme Court cases in my cases, but most of them is for the purpose of revealing the fraud, number one, by the court itself, and number two, the meaning of words, the meaning of phrases, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have Black's Law Dictionary, you have Bouvier's Dictionary, and you get a lot of cases out of that, and that's the law. They ignore it all. They totally, 100% ignore it. So we're up against evil. You can win. It's rare. And they usually send the fixes in the IRS. It's very difficult to win. The mortgage company is very difficult to win. Anything with the banking. Anything status quo. Any major corporation, you're not going to win against it. Okay? They love the cases.
Would that include the statute of limitations that we're talking about?
They don't care about the statutes of limitations. They'll use it when it's their benefit. We're talking evil here. I was so beside myself when I discovered all this. I mean, I just couldn't believe. I said, where are we living? You know? Where are we? We have no judicial system. Okay? It is very rare to get a just court. Now, again, the courts have become corrupt more and more over time. They've done this all covertly. And they pass all these laws. These things happen little by little. They get all these strategies. And now they're at the point, you know, 20 years, well, let's say, I think 10, 15, 20 years ago, and again, the further back you go, the better chance you had to win in these cases. Because some judges just didn't do the right thing. But they got guns to their head, and they do whatever they want. Now it's so corrupt. They're blatant. They do it right in the open. They don't care, and they'll erase. You know, they'll delete a lot of stuff as time goes on. They'll do all their criminal activity, and as time goes on, you know, all of a sudden things change in the court case as far as the facts are concerned, as far as the rulings and things going on. But now it's gotten so bad, I don't think they can't even do that anymore, and they just don't care. It's really bad. You know, if you listen, C-SPAN. Hold on, if you watch C-SPAN or some of the YouTube that come out on what's going on in C-SPAN, and you watch the Senate when they do, they have these judges coming up, and they're coming in to be, to become a judge on the federal judiciary, and you listen on to some of these judges. They sent judges up there that just had, just in administrative court, just in courts that's not even justice courts, okay, but administrative courts. Judges that don't even know what the Seventh Amendment is. They don't know anything. They're just total morons, and that's what they want. They want morons who could be controlled as judges. And we're talking federal judges here. That's what they've been putting on the bench for quite some time now. It's a big problem. And they have no real serious education, they're just morons. So, and the state is worse, I think, in the sense of their education. But the federal courts, I think, are getting even more worse than the states now, I think. But it was the states that really were the big, big problems, and the federal to some degree. But U.S., anything under 26, though, you never very rarely win.
Well, could you understand this statement? It says, this is an
action. By the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1, there's only one other person in the queue, so we're going to go to them shortly. But go ahead. Let's finish up here. We do have another person.
Yeah, I want to get this one on here, too. There's just two things. Could I file a dispute on that judgment in a court? Could I do that?
Yeah, you can do an appeal.
Is there a certain procedure, a certain form I got to use, or just...
We teach it.
I'm going to put that ICC 1308 on there. Okay, but anyway, here's what I want you to understand.
Well, again, look it. Hold on. you only have so much time to file an appeal. You have to go through notices. You have to do certain things for certain cases in order to go through. For instance, if you want to get out of a town court, you can't go in and make a plea. If you make a plea, you're done. You can't get out of it. There's no other court that will hear the case. It's already written in their things. It's denied, period. You have to go in, not make a plea, and come in on a special appearance challenging jurisdiction. And if you don't do it that way, okay, and then you have to move it to federal court, into state court, and then maybe to federal court if necessary. But if you don't come in that way, you're not going to be able to get into the state court to make a decision on jurisdiction. Now, the law says jurisdiction must be proved. When you challenge jurisdiction, it must be decided and proved. They can't prove that they have jurisdiction. So you can win on those cases on that, from that level, coming in that way from those courts.
Well, on the part of the revolving lines of credit thing, I've got notices, and I saw something on my credit bureau that was there, and I called up TransUnion, I called all three of them, and I called up. This is way beyond the statute of limitations. They took it off. We have to take those off.
But look at their strategy. I've never looked deep into. We're going to end with you in a minute because we've got two people in the queue now. We do want to get to them. But look, there is a process that you can use. They cannot report on things that have not been lawfully, innocent until proven guilty thing. If there's no judgment against you just because they got information from someplace, this, that, or the other thing, as far as the legal is concerned, the law, it's hearsay. So it has to go through a process, okay? And if it doesn't go through that process, it's just hearsay. So, again, you can win. The problem is they don't want you.
Well, yeah, and I guess if I may read this statement on here, I'm trying to get to how this would connect to this mortgage that we're buying, all right? The statute of limitation, I'm not sure I understand this. Maybe you can help me with that. I'll read it. It's number 2.
The statute of limitations apply, but again, they may not want it to apply. Remember,
I'm going to just use this as the way it says. I just need to understand, all right? An action upon a contract contained in any conveyance or mortgage of or instrument affecting the title to real property except a covenant of warranty, an action upon which must be commenced within 10 years after the final decision against the title of the covenantor. Okay. Who's the covenantor?
Well, look at that would be
the buyer or the seller?
Let me think about that. That's a good question. Probably go into blacks to be sure on that. But I would think it would be the buyer because there's a covenant made on behalf of the buyer. So, but if you go into Black's Law or Bouvier's Law, Black's Law is more in depth, got a lot more information, been around, I guess, a lot longer too. I don't know. But I would go to Black's Law and look that up and get the specific on that. But I think it's probably the buyer. But on the other hand, who's making? Well, again, the covenant is being made.
The covenant. Think about this.
We made a covenant with God. The United States of America made a covenant with God in the very beginning, as the natural law. When we set ourselves under natural law through the Declaration of Independence, that was a covenant with God. Okay, so I would think that from the perspective of we the people, would be the covenantor. But again, I have to look
at it. Well, the key that I'm looking at is a contract contained in any conveyance or mortgage. Well, if I'm the seller and I got this judgment out, that's going to be contained in the conveyance or mortgage of an instrument affecting
Correct.
The real
property. Well, again,
it's going to affect that property.
Law is constructed. Hold on. Yeah. I'm going to say this last thing, and if you want to continue, you've got to get back in line. Otherwise, we're not going to hear. There's a couple people in the queue now. When law is constructive, okay, it starts off here, but then it may be changed a little there, and things are added on, and it's constructive. Okay, they constructed a fraud in USC 26, for instance, on liability. Okay, if you go down to rabbit holes, you find out the people have no liability of paying income tax at all. Okay, there is no liability at all. Now, on the surface, it looks like it. But it, there's reference to other codes. There's words that have meanings, and then there are other places where it gives the definitions of the meanings. For instance, the United States, I just can't think of it at the moment. There's one pretty powerful one that takes the United States and changes its whole position on what it means legally, okay? And so you got to go through law, go down a rabbit hole, and there's reference to these things, and then you look up words and you find meanings. For instance, if you go into the U.S. codes, U.S. codes have all their own dictionaries in there. They give meanings to words. Usually it's pretty decent, I imagine, from what I've come up with, and I haven't done a lot of study in those areas, but of course I've had to deal with
the last comment on that, on all those things, or on my credit report, I'm given the opportunity to dispute. And then I give my reasons, whatever I'm disputing on it, and of course I'm always right when I come in there, and they take it off. Mm-hmm. The thing that's got this whole thing going is I knew nothing about this thing. I'd have dealt with this a long time ago. And because I would have disputed it, because I've always been opportunity, and the way I read it in the statute and the law is that we have an opportunity to dispute any of those charges against.
Well, you do. Again, if you want to go continue in this, you're going to have to get back in line. I got to go to the other people. And
Yep. No, that's fine. I'll wait and see if I can get back in the line later. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try to hit towards the next question, and it should go to Margie. But if it doesn't, I'll try to repair it from this side. Let me see, because it didn't pick her up. She should have been the first. Okay, yeah, Margie, you got
the... Hey there, John.
Good. I forget, what state are you in?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Okay, go right ahead.
Well, I sent something to you, I guess about 2 weeks ago, and Jan got it too. And I just wanted to know what your take is on it. But I love this woman. She's from New York. She's trying to clean up, we demand valid elections that obey the law. And I love how she speaks. Her name's Marty Hawley. She's the CEO of United Sovereigns America. Americans. United Sovereigns Americans. Pardon?
Where in New York is she?
Type it up, please, on your computer. www.united. Sovereign Americans. The way she speaks is so good. She needs volunteers. They have a resolution on here. We demand valid elections that obey the law. And she did something in 2022. She had New York audit something or other. They've audited.
Is that a com or a net? .com?
Yes, sir. Yeah, UnitedSovereignAmericans.com.
.com. Okay, let's see if we get to it.
And she did the New York one. There's resolutions on there, and she wants volunteers to help out, do a lot of things. Like they have to read six people. They like to go to the to read the resolutions for each state. What are the county meetings, and then they vote on it if they want to. They don't have to. She's making them aware of the voter, of all the fraud. They have scorecards, these voter scorecards. They already have all the evidence. They have everything, She's trying to do it in these 24 states, but she has to hire these attorneys. There's one in Maryland they're going to do. They sued them in Maryland, and they're $100,000, because they have all the evidence, and they're going to do the resolution there in Maryland, that's what
well,
they're
going to federal judge dismissed the suit, it says here. The federal judge dismissed the suit seeking to halt certification of Maryland's election. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, uh-huh. And then she said, I listened, she's on, they're on Rumble also, and you can always listen, because I study it, you can listen to the all the other ones that they've had, and they've done it in Texas too, someone reading the resolution at the county meeting.
Remember what Trump said. Trump said, we got it all, okay?
Yes.
We got all of it. And that's going back to the 2020 election, And also what was going on the 2016 election, too. We got it all. So they got all
She wants to make sure. She said she wants to make sure for the 2024 election that it'll be all right. And I know it will.
Oh, it will.
This poor thing, she's doing so much work. She lives in New York, has a husband, children. She homeschools her children. And the way she speaks, she is very, very good. And I've listened to her the Tuesday night calls, too. She goes and does the federal laws, you know, on Tuesday night meeting through WebEx. And, you know, it's just...
Well, I don't know anything about... I don't know anything about this. If there was a connection made, I'd talk with her. I don't want to discourage anybody from doing anything. Sometimes I think people are doing things that they'd be better off doing something else, but I'm not going to tell them that. And maybe they'll do both things. I don't know. What I suggest that we're doing, and they can continue what they're doing. A lot of things with the voting, it's not really, well, it does do one thing. It wakes people up. It gets people...
Yes. County meetings,
The only reason we haven't been able to fix this problem is because the people haven't caught up yet. This problem should have been addressed, or rightfully should have been addressed anyway, going back in 2016 and coming into 2017. It should have been addressed there, but the people weren't ready to receive it. They wouldn't go along with it. And in 2020, they had to continue going on allowing it to happen because the people had to wake up. And now the people are waking up.
The Board of Elections, that if they've done all their homework on it, and all these hours, trying to investigate it, a lot of people, she has these scorecards, these voter scorecards. They tell you where the fraud is and everything. It's all on the scorecard. But
the people are looking for the solution in the wrong place. the place for the solution.
She uses the Constitution a little bit too, in Title 18, and she's very good. But
right, well, I'll talk with her. If you can connect me with her, maybe we can do some things together. But here's the thing: most people are
volunteers.
The wrong direction. The solution is there's only one solution to the problem, and the solution is found in We the People. Government by consent is the solution.
Yeah, she says that too. She says all that.
So people have to, on the grassroots level, okay, they have to get involved at every county, and that's why we're building committees of safety. Committees of safety is the true committee men, okay, that is statutory. They've stolen the committee men. They put statutes to control them. Party rules to control them, oscillate the election so there's always power inside. When it comes to the committee men, it's supposed to be wiped out 100% throughout the entire United States, all together at one time, and then you come run again. And that's supposed to be done on every even year. And the problem is that they've oscillated the elections from odd and even, so there's always... The evil is always in charge and always there waiting for the newcomers in order to bring them into subjection and get them to do their bidding and walk the papers for all these criminals and get them into the ballot, and they continue to destroy America. So we the people have to take control of this, and that's what the committees of safety that we're building across America is all about.
And the voter laws are, they're not, we recognize them,
it doesn't matter.
The Board of Elections,
Yeah, but look at, once you get enough committees of safety, we have 3,134 counties. So we need 3,134 committees of safety, okay? But if you can get, let's say, two-thirds or three-quarters, just over 50%. If you can get over 50%, you can take control of this nation, okay? And the more you have, the more counties that do it, then the more powerful you become. Okay, so we need a critical mass. I think we're very close. We're talking with other groups right now, very, very large groups. I don't want to mention any names right now. And hopefully we're going to be able to do business together and get the proper paperwork put together for this thing, get the message out to millions of people. And then if we can get the message out to millions of people that are already involved, then maybe we can pull 2 or 3 or 4% out of that. And that would be enough to take control of the entire United States. Because remember what Thomas Jefferson said, we don't have government by the majority. we have government by the majority that participates. They're the ones that control everything. They're the ones that get the people onto the ballot. They're the ones that control the whole election process. So the people have to take it. The committee men are supposed to be at the election. When the election, you know,
all fraud there.
When they close down at the end of the evening, they're supposed to count the votes in public. And the committee men are supposed to be at least one in every election district. There should be at least one, two is more, or more is better, but there has to be one. And they should be certifying the fact that they observed a proper and a rightful election process where there was no cheating. And there was a process on how you counted the votes. Each vote was counted by the witness of three people, okay? One person would look at the ballot, say what it is, okay? Person would be standing behind them and acknowledge that's what it says, and another person on the other side of the table would be writing it down, and someone else behind them confirming the fact that it was written down, and that's how the process was to go. Now, you would say, or they would say, oh, well, it takes too long, it'd be forever. Not at all. You see, because most election districts, they don't have much more than maybe, you know, usually, for instance, if you're breaking it up by parties, it is about 200, 300 Democrats, you know, within a particular election district, and then maybe 200, 300 Republicans, and then maybe 100, you know, people from other parties. So there might be six, depending on the size of the town, the county, the cities, and all this other stuff. There may be only about 400 ballots to be counted in each election district.
It's going to change, you know, because it's going to be right when we get over to the Republic rule of law. It is going to change. There is so much in people that are dead that, you know, the whole thing needs to be cleaned up, John. Board, every board, you know, state board of the voting boards, you know.
Well, I believe the military is going to control the next election. Most likely, not 100%. Most likely, that's going to be the case. I don't see any way to get away from it. They're going to do everything they can to subvert it. Okay. The entire Democratic Party is totally 100% corrupt. Maybe there's a person here or two that'll wake up and still kind of lost and come over the. And I'm talking about the people involved. I'm not talking about just the regular Joe that's called a Democrat, you know, that's my party, blah, 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 blah. But we're talking about the people that are in control here. These people are corrupt to the core. Mm-hmm. Most of the Republican Party is corrupt to the core, too.
Yeah, and she did take something to the. They did have a. I don't know where she took it, but they said, "Well, you don't have the same old crap. You don't have standing." So then she said, "Well, we got to take it to the, you know, the."
That's a common thing that they say all the time. Robert Schultz has been up to the court system, especially at the federal level, and particularly dealing with problems like you're talking about. And all the time they say you don't have standing, but that's not true. He's one of the people. He has standing. They're the ones that have no standing. Okay.
Bribed and blackmailed and their compromise is the problem, John. You know.
That's it. You got it.
It's going to change, you know, but. And how can we change it to, like you said, well, you need $100,000 too to help when new people come in, you know, you put it all on the computer, these elections, you got primary, and, you know, we don't want it to happen again. It's not going to happen again, and we're going to have paper ballots and everything. But
yeah, it's going to happen.
She's going through all this. I mean, she's just trying to do what she thinks she needs to do.
Well, again, I wouldn't want to discourage her, even though I think she could probably put her time in a better way, in a better place on the one hand. Sure. But on the other hand, this plays a major part or a major role of waking up people. So, again.
That's what she's really doing. Yeah, that's what she's doing.
But also it digs up some evidence that can be used, because remember, the Trump military has got all the evidence already.
Yeah.
And they can accumulate also other evidence.
That's what I like to tell her, really. He's got on Starlink. It's all there, and it's going to show it on the EBS. Something's going to happen, you know, maybe May 29th, 2024 is John F. Kennedy. He is still alive. And he's 107 years old, and he was born in 1917. And JFK.
I don't think JFK is alive.
He's the vice president. JFK is the vice president. Nissan.
Are you talking about Junior?
Yes, yes, sir.
Yeah, he's not alive. I don't believe he's alive. A lot of people that might be in the know, I don't know if you're familiar with Q. Q is military intelligence. Question was asked to Q. Is JFK
started in 1860.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, right. It was during the Lincoln's
Civil
day.
War. Yeah.
Right. So, but the Q was asked directly, okay, is JFK still alive? And Q came out, absolutely not, no.
Well, he has to say
so
that. He
that's pretty good evidence that most likely he's not still alive. I mean, he was murdered. There's no doubt about that.
So did John F. Kennedy Jr. He faked his death because the war is on good and evil, and evil's going to win. I mean, evil's going down. This 2024 is for justice and judgment, John. And
no doubt about it. Yeah, look at Leviathan needs to be judged before the Lord comes, and we can see it coming. Judgment is going to take place. Nations are going to be judged. And the control of those nations, of course, is Leviathan, Bible, and so yes, that is one of the last things that's going to happen before the Lord comes, and man will say peace and safety at last. So when that comes, we know the Lord's at the door.
Right.
Anyway, with that, I got to go.
But I just wanted to, mention that to you. But she's she's so good the way she speaks and everything. But she's doing a good job.
If you have contact with her and you want to, connect with me, make the connection. So we'll talk. Okay. I'll talk with her and see maybe we could do some things together. Okay.
Yeah, she lives in New York.
All right. Thanks. I got to take the next call.
All right, John.
All right.
Goodbye.
Hi. We're coming to the end here, so we don't have too much time, but what's that, Linda from Virginia, is it?
Yes, Linda in Virginia. Can you hear me?
You got the mic. We hear you.
Okay. Well, I'll just make a lead-in statement, and it has to do with our health care, and it appears to be completely broken.
Absolutely.
I have a situation going on where I applied for Medicare. They were negligent in processing the application. After 3 months, I contacted them and, said and told them that I had submitted it over 3 months ago. So they checked. Initially, they checked, and then they said, we didn't receive it. And I said, well, that's funny because I sent it certified mail and faxed it to you.
Well, go ahead, finish up.
5 minutes later, she comes back. She says, oh, here it is. We found it. Ooh. And then she backdated it for 3 months or 4 months to anyway. That created I didn't know it at the time, but that created almost a $900 bill for me for a time when I didn't even know I had coverage and had not been notified. And now, I'll just fast forward, skip over all the details. So I filed a four-page thing to both Social Security and my provider. I haven't received a single response in over 90 days. Now they have suspended or they've stopped my Medicare Part B coverage, and they have stopped my Social Security. And I wrote to congressmen another.
I'll tell you how to deal with this, but you have to have the ability to do this. Maybe you have some knowledge to be able to do this. You have to understand how due process works. And if not, you can get the book or go to the course that we provide. But Here's some cases that you can win. I think they're pretty decent in ruling the proper way because they got to rule somewhere to make things look good anyway. I have a case with Social Security for somebody, and they owe three years back pay, and they make the same claim that you're making, that they said the same thing, that, oh, no, you filed in such a date, and we have nothing on the record. I mean, I have tons. I'm a record keeper. I certify everything, and I put this together from day one. I got a book, okay, literally probably an inch and a half thick, with all of the documentations of all of my communications and everything I've done. So I've got everything. And if you got that kind of evidence, and you take that, you move that over to the state court because they're the overseers of the administrative court systems, okay, and you move it there, and you got the proof, they'll rule for you. I mean, I doubt very much they won't rule against. They'll rule against you because in those areas, they'll go against the other administrating systems, you know, Social Security and different. They won't go up against the IRS.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I'm as we speak, writing to Senator Warner since I'm in Virginia, and I figure McCain is worthless, so I'm not going to bother with that, but. And my congressman, but why, this is catastrophic. Why do we have to do this? I mean, it is just unbelievable, just unbelievable. I mean, obviously I know I've handled my own court cases and I'm, you know, fairly comfortable or whatever. I'm not a lawyer, but I do okay. But, to have to go through all that, I already, you know, submitted a 4-page detailed description of the whole issue and didn't receive a single response, not acknowledgement, not a reply, not a resolution, nothing. This ghosting and this gaslighting of the American people for these taxpayer-funded entities is unacceptable. It's just unacceptable.
Again, they view us as slaves. They view us as chattel. It's a sick situation. But most of the problems with these different agencies of the type that you're talking, like particularly Social Security and many others, it's incompetency. That's
well,
the problem.
I hesitate to call it incompetence because I think it might be intentional collusion and extortion, you know?
The system is set up for that. And look, I got a case that on Social Security, and I finally got somebody to see and understand exactly what the problem is and all of the evidence, and they said, you're absolutely right.
So that's the whole battle right there, is to get anybody to pay attention to it.
Listen, the system is set up to really defunct the whole thing, because even with that, they have no system to correct the problem that I'm talking about with these people. They said, you know, they said no matter where you go, there are three possibilities. That you can go to three different groups of people within the system, and every one of them says, well, we can't do nothing about that. My only option, there's only one option at that point, and that's the New York State Supreme Court to take it and move it into that court system to get a decision. And that's what I'm going to do. But and I have
let me mention something else. I suspect that they are doing it intentionally because my understanding is the Democrats want Medicare for all, and I think they think if enough people get mad or get angry about it, that they will be able to do that and then get their hands on the Social Security Medicare money. So well, I'm not, you know, I'm thinking that's what's behind it. It's just speculation, but, you know, I think that's why you're just treated, you're just ghosted and gaslighted, you know, and all this.
Yeah, that's one of many things. I can't say that it's not. It may be partial in one and something else in another. Yeah, but you're
the reason I say that is because on another issue, it had to do with transportation to appointments. I wrote some senators, and one of them, unfortunately, I couldn't find too many Republican senators that dealt with Medicare, but I did send one to a Democrat, Democrat representative. And that's exactly what he wrote back. He said, he wrote back and he said, the Medicare system is broken. He said, we need Medicare for all. And that's when I realized what they might be up to, you know.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't know. We're like between a rock and a hard place, and we pay. This is what really burns me up. These premiums are not cheap, these medical premiums every month. You know, even just have Medicare. I have other health insurance, but if you just have Medicare, you're paying close to $200 a month for that. And that is coming.
Social Security?
Huh?
You're on Social Security?
Well, no, I'm entitled to Social Security, but I have other.
I'm asking you, are you on Social Security right now?
Well, I was until they took the Medicare Part B from me.
Okay. Well, again, I don't know how you can lose you. Once you're on Social Security, it's very, you know, and if you're retired, if you're over 65, actually 63, but let's say 65, you have to.
They just stopped it because
you gotta go into the court. I'm telling you, you gotta go into the court to deal with it. They will fix the problem. You gotta pull all your evidence together, and you gotta go into the court to fix it. There are certain things. There's no other way. Remember, in a lot of bureaucracy, they write these things. They write regulations that because they're dealing with a lot of these people are morons. They only understand a tiny.
They're hiring people who are not qualified to deal with this.
Exactly. And so
also I Googled the local Social Security office, and if you look at the reviews, all you have to do is Google your local Social Security office. I can't believe the reviews are like all negative. They're like, we had to wait in line for 2 hours. You know, I submitted something. They said they never got it. All the comments are like that.
It's mostly.
I did find there is a Inspector General report out this month, May, about the waiting times at Social Security. And what they cite is the pandemic. Now, we are years past the pandemic.
Oh, that's the big excuse. Listen, I got to move on because we're 6 minutes over and we do have two people in the queue. Yeah. I'm going to give a minute or two and then
That's my whole topic of the day.
But here's the thing. Look, if you can get your Social Security back, the bottom line is this, and a lot of people don't know this, okay? When you go onto Social Security, okay, you're on a limited income. And then, you know, they give you the Medicare, and then they start sending you a bill for that. They take it right out of your Social Security. Well, if you call them up and say, I can't afford that. I'll just live without medical coverage. Just take it off. They'll say, oh, no, if you can't afford it, we'll just give it to you. And it's $0, and you get it. That's it. It becomes part of Social Security. And it should be. Medicare should be part of Social Security and the subject. And after 65, you can still continue working. And if you are working, then of course, that's a whole different story then because you got more of an income. So, but if you're just on Social Security, they got to give it to you. But with that,
the ironic thing of this is I have other health care that basically overlaps most of what Medicare would provide. There's only a couple things that I end up getting under Medicare in addition to what I already have. Mm-hmm. So, but this is just these heroic efforts that it takes to get this and then to keep it. It's just insanity, you know?
Absolutely. All right, Linda, I got to move on.
Thank you so much for listening to me.
And we could talk another time. All right.
Okay.
Let's take, I only got a minute or two for each person because it's time to close down here. So let me go for the next question. Samuel, you got the mic.
Okay. Have we established that the United States is a corporation?
It is corporations incorporated in through the 1871 And it was executed through the Organic Act.
Perfect. So since we've established that, we do understand that we are all contractually agreed to contracts that we've signed throughout our years.
Not
and
me.
NNI's,
no, never had a meeting of the mind with me. Nope. We have no contract with them because a contract requires a meeting of the mind. There's never been a meeting of the mind. Anything hidden is fraud. It's all fraud.
I do understand that. Did you sign any type of tax forms or 1099s, 1040s, 1040 EZs, driver's license, any of those type of forms with the government?
Not in over 40 years.
So you have not?
It doesn't matter, though, even if I did sign it, because it doesn't. There's no meeting of the minds, okay?
No, I understand. It is fraud, and fraud vitiates everything. And I get that.
The other thing is you know, for instance, a big thing or a big deal is made on being a citizen. I'm a citizen of the United States. I'm a citizen particularly of the state of New York. But if I move to New Jersey tomorrow, I'm a citizen there. Even if I pass through, I'm a citizen of New Jersey. I get all the rights. If something happens there, I can deal with the courts and whatever business I have to deal with. That's it. Now, people run away from that. They just change the meaning of things. And you could find that if you go into the dictionary part, because they define the meanings of words within every one of these codes, so you can go and find that. But it's all hidden, okay? Because remember, law
it is
destructive. So with all being hidden, that's a fraud. You can't have a contract and hide something. It's a fraud. Just because I sign a piece of paper because I got a driver's license or whatever it is that I do with the government, that doesn't give them any power or authority over me. I don't give up any of my rights. And because I might say, yeah, I'm a citizen, that means nothing to me. The United States Constitution uses the word citizen 7 times. Okay, I am a citizen of the United States. Now, people will say, oh, you know, that's bad, or you're in trouble because now you're subjected. No, I'm not subjected to them because I'll call a fraud, and it is what it is. And that's the argument we make in court all the time. Okay, National Liberty Alliance has built everything on that fact that we're dealing with the fraud. Okay, these are subverters. They belong at the end of a short rope or at least in jail, depending on their crimes, and they're all guilty. And things are going to happen. All these prisons they've been building, well, we do need them now because a lot of people are going to be filling them up, and we need to get the people out of those prisons that don't even belong there. And it's such a problem. All of these court cases, I'd say 95%, and it's just a guess, it's just a high percentage, so I don't know what it really is, it's all built on fraud. You can't stack any place where there's a stacked jury. If you have a jury that's not fully informed, that court case is null and void. It's done. You got to have it all over again. It wasn't in a court of justice. They use civil law. It's all fraud. So there's a big problem that has to be dealt with. A lot of people, and even guilty people, have to be set free and be given new trials. Is the evidence fresh enough to be able to do anything about it? Does anything have to be done about it? It's a mess. But it's going to be repaired. And, you know, I think National Liberty Alliance is playing a major role in it, in my opinion, strong opinion.
I, to be honest with you, I would agree with you because the information that you have is extremely strong and you do have historical law behind you. But if I would have one point of contention from one thing that I've noticed throughout the entire time that I've listened is you do fight a lot in court. And one thing that I was noticing about a court and its specific structure is it's like a bank. They're just moving money.
No. That's what they made it into. It's not what it was. We got courts of justice and we got courts of equity. Everything, even equity, is under the scrutiny of common law. That's why.
And I agree with you. I agree with you. But I cannot access a court of equity if I am particularly contracting with some specific nature of government based on jurisdiction.
Well, why would you want to enter a court of equity? Why would you want to? Because a court of equity deals with statute.
Well, I mean, that's all trust and stuff like that, but I would like to because that's higher law. That's more supreme than...
No. You want to go to a court of law, not a court of equity. You see, Constitution provides for equity and law. That's the it's the only two jurisdictions on the land. That's it. There is nothing else. There are other things where the people agree to certain things, but that generally, that would be a contract law. You and I have a contract, and we agree to certain things, and then we use the law to apply it when someone breaks that law. And you're still in a court of law. You're not in a court of equity. Okay? See, a court of equity is legislative law. A court of law is the law of the land. It identifies ultimately with the Bible. It's the law of the heart. Okay, everybody knows you don't have to make a law to say this is a wrongdoing or that's a wrongdoing. You don't have to make a law. You don't have to write a statute for that. Everybody knows. All you have to do is listen to the story and say, hey, that person's been injured. But that's all you need to know. That's the law. It doesn't go any more difficult than that. Okay, as far as applying the equity side of thing, we have the Constitution. We write the law that applies to them and give them the authority to write legislative law within the realm of common law. And that's why the juries have the power of nullification. They go to court, they see something, they got a law. It might be a situation where someone operates in a commercial activity where certain regulations or statutes are applied to that particular situation, or someone working for a government agency and certain codes apply to those individuals. And maybe it's something that just doesn't fit. It could be just something that doesn't fit in this case and still is good other places, or it's something that just doesn't fit at all because it's wrong. Okay, well, the jury can say, hey, we nullify that. That doesn't hold up. We're not going to rule. Our thinking and conclusions is not going to be upon resting on any of those things. And that's the power of nullification. So equity identifies with legislative law, and it's still under common law. It's under American jurisprudence, which lays the whole thing out, brings it right back to common law. But it's controlling. There are regulations for that. When people work for the government, they're working under regulations. They have to obey them. And now if you break your regulations, you could lose your job, or they can fine. I don't think they can fine you, but maybe they can say, hey, you go home for a month, you know, and without pay, and you can come back later. There's certain things they can do, and it's all written up. If they take it to court and the jury doesn't agree with that, they can throw that out or agree with it. But that's equity, okay? Commercial activity has to be under control. There's got to be regulations. There's got to be statutes. Things happen. If you do this, we're going to do that. This is going to be applied to you. That's equity. And equity is identifies with justice, but it also identifies with the justice in legislative law. Law is common law, period. In law, at law, all law, those three. If it's IN, law, AT, law, or just LAW, law, that's all common law. Okay? With that, I got to go. I got one other person, and we're way over.
I'm not trying to take you any over than what you are. You did say law, and law to me is actually three different jurisdictions. You have land, common law, common to all man, and that's what you're speaking of. You have air, that's trust law, ecclesiastical law. It's above all laws, really.
Well, there is a total of, I believe, if I recall.
And then you have the jurisdiction of the water. What we actually as citizens function in, the majority of commerce is regulated by it. You go to your congressman and he says, hey, we'll try to help you out here, but realistically, they're just regulating land, the water jurisdiction. That's all they're doing. They don't give a shit about as a man in the common area.
I'm going to make a comment, then I got to move on to the next person, and you can come back next week and we can talk more about this.
I'd love to. Yeah, no, I'll exit.
To make a comment and move on this situation. In Black's Law Dictionary, there are 51 jurisdictions. 51. One of them is law, L-A-W, common law. Everything else applies to different situations, and most of it doesn't even apply to us here in America, of course. There is the law of the sea, which is maritime law. But that's not applying, it has nothing to do with us, that's unless you're out at sea, okay, it doesn't have anything with the people on the land. The only thing that's on the people on the land is two jurisdictions and two only, and it's clearly laid out in the Constitution. That's law, L-A-W, common law, which is what we the people are under, which we're not under any man's law, none whatsoever. We're under God's law, period. That's defined and laid out as the foundation of our law, which was laid out in the Declaration of Independence, which is a covenant with God, asking for his blessings, and we're going to live under his law. That's law. The other law is called equity, and equity is the power that we the people gave them through the Constitution. In the federal level, we gave them 18 powers. One of them is to make law on the other 17 powers, and that's equity law. In other words, man's law, legislative law. We've given them that job to control commercial activity and also government agencies as far as whatever the agencies will be. There's a law for Congress. There's laws for the president. There's laws for all of the different agencies. And again, we can nullify that law in a court of law. See, if it's a legislative situation, it wouldn't be a court of law. But if there is a jury, usually criminal, but it could be other things too, where the people move it into a court of law, the equity that applies to them, you know, there was a legislative law that applies to the individual that's in question, okay, that still is applied upon them. Because they agreed to that when they came to work on a job or to do some commercial activity, they agreed to that legislative to act within those regulations, those statutes, or whatever the case may be. So that's an agreement, and that's open. It's not hidden, okay? It's laid out very clearly. So once they break that, and if you do go to court, especially if it's and you're going to ask for a jury, at that point, the jury has the power of nullification of that law. But the jury will not nullify the law of the heart. That's the law of the land. That's the real law. Because God said he wrote the law in the hearts of men. So the law, we know the law. We know when a wrongdoing has been done because we live in this world. And we see bad things happen. We've been, you know, bad things have happened to us. So we could see the injury. We understand the injury. And we can appreciate the compensation required to fix that injury. So, but anyway, with that, we can talk again. Maybe next week. I got to move on. Okay, thanks, Sam. I forgot to ask, what state are you in, by the way?
Ohio. I'm an Ohioan.
Okay, all right. Maybe we'll talk next week if you want or whenever. I got to move on to the last caller. I got to close down, all right? So thanks for the call, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. T-Zach from Chicago, Illinois. You got the mic. We only got a minute or two. I apologize. I got to get going, but we'll spend a minute. What do you got? Tizak from Illinois, Chicago. Okay, last call. Okay, not getting anywhere here. Let's see, they're unmuted. I guess maybe they walked away from the computer. Okay, we're going to end it for the... Thanks, everyone, for coming. Hopefully, we'll see you next week, and we will post this program up on National Liberty Alliance. You can find it on YouTube. You'll be able to find it on Rumble. You can find it on our website by going to today's issues and come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and you'll see the latest, which will be posted here. Good night, everybody.